And we're holding on Ayin Hey Omid Beis, six lines from the bottom. So we're in the middle of discussing the question of, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer had said that a husband is able to be made for his wife's nedarim in advance, meaning before she even said them, and the Chachamim disagreed. So he said Rabbi Eliezer brought a Kal Vachomer to say that it should work. And the Chachamim said, the Kal Vachomer is all fine and good, but we have a pasuk to the contrary. The Gemara is actually, as we go through the discussion, we're going to see the possibility that maybe the Chachamim actually disagree with his Kal Vachomer, or maybe not. Maybe they do, after all, accept his Kal Vachomer. They just say that it's prevented by Gzeiras HaKasev. So we'll get to that point as we go along. Anyway, so we're in the middle of Rabbi Eliezer. We're in the middle of asking the question, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that the husband can be made for in advance. Does that mean that the neder momentarily takes effect and then goes away, or that it never even takes effect in the first place, the nafkamina being if somebody else is matfis in that neder? So say, for example, she said, I'll be a nazira. If somebody else were to say, va'ani, and I, would his nazirus be in effect or not? If we say that her nazirus was never chal, then there's nothing to be matfis in. If you say that for a moment there it was chal, As we talked about earlier, maybe there is an actual moment when it's chal, the amount of time that it would take him to say mufalach. Maybe we don't mean that there's an actual moment that it's chal, but still it had a certain, that we can talk about it having a certain validity before it disappears. Anyway, do we say that? And if we say that, then somebody else can be matfis in it, or do we say that not, and another person cannot be matfis in it? So we're in the middle of discussing that point, and we were trying to bring proofs one way or the other. So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's try to bring another proof. In a Braisa says that the Chachamim made another argument to Rabbi Eliezer. Omer loy le Rabbi Eliezer, umam mikveh shemaleh satmein mitumasan. They told him, madach mikveh, which causes anyone who's tamei to become tahor, but ein matzil ala tahorim milatame. It does not prevent somebody who's tahor from becoming tamei. Now, there's a few different explanations. There's a few different girsois. Actually, the Ran brings no less than three different girsois in the Gemara over here. So first, we'll go according to the girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara, and then we'll go back and deal with the other girsois. So the point is that, for example, a person goes into the mikveh. Suppose that there is a sheretz in the mikveh. We don't say that him toveling in the mikveh prevents the sheretz from making him tamei. The fact is that if he's touching the sheretz in the mikveh, then he remains tamei. This is the famous idea that we say tovel the sheretz biyadoi, that we say, for example, if a person does tshuva and he's verbally saying that he regrets his averus, but he doesn't actually give them up, then it's like toveling while holding a sheretz, which is ineffective. So a mikveh doesn't prevent someone who is tahor and dips in the mikveh, and there's a sheretz in the mikveh, and he touches it while he's dipping, then he's going to become tamei. Yet the mikveh is able to be metahar somebody who was already tamei. So then, Odom shein malas atmein mutumasam. Well, then let's consider that a person is not able to prevent to make something tamei. To make it tahor. Namely, there's a din like this. Suppose that a person swallowed a keli, which is tamei. An example that it gives in the Mishnah, suppose a person swallowed a ring, which is tamei. We don't say that then when the person, we don't say that the person, we don't say that that if now this person goes and tovels in the mikveh, the where he becomes tahor, the ring will become tahor along with him. We don't say that. The ring remains tamei, and eventually when he throws it back up or somehow it's removed from his body, it's still going to be tamei. So we're saying, in other words, a person is not able to make the tamei ring tahor by toveling while it's in his body. Eino din, so they say, shouldn't it be a Kal Vachomer? Shelo yatzel ala tahorin militamei. Shouldn't it be the case that wouldn't it be a Kal Vachomer that he wouldn't prevent something tahor from becoming tamei? Meaning, what if we have the other way around? What if he swallowed the ring was tahor, then he went into an oil ames. So now he himself becomes tamei. Of course, he's in the same oil as a dead body. the ring that is inside his stomach does not become tomei because the fact that it's inside his body prevents it from becoming tomei. The fact that it's inside his body saves it from becoming tomei. So now let's consider, say the Chachamim. So let's draw an analogy. You're saying that we're saying that a mikveh has a mikveh is more easily able to be metahar somebody who's tomei than to prevent somebody from becoming tomei, because we're saying that a mikveh is able to be metahar somebody tomei who dips in it. But on the other hand, that's if a tohar person dips in it, it won't prevent him from becoming tomei if he touches a sheretz in the mikveh. So now with a person, so what happens? We're saying the other way around. The ring is tahor. He prevents it from becoming tomei. He saves it from becoming tomei because it's inside his body. But on the other hand, he's not metaher it when it's already tomei. The fact that he swallowed it and then goes into the mikveh is not able to make it tahor. Now, we don't say a kavachomer. Now, we might have thought to say a kavachomer. We might have said that maybe, in fact, the person should, that in fact, we might have argued based on, we might have used a kavachomer from mikveh to person to say that by the same token, the person, in fact, when he swallows the ring, should cause it to become tahor when he dips in the mikveh. The fact that we don't say that, so that shows, in other words, that it's easier to... So that shows, in other words, that we don't necessarily make such a kavachomer. So there's a big difference between something that was already tomei and something that hasn't yet become tomei. Well, then, by the same token, they say to Rabbi Eliezer, so what are you telling me a kavachomer? As far as nedarim, you're telling me that a neder that actually was already expressed and therefore already exists is stronger than a neder that doesn't yet exist because she hasn't yet said it. And therefore, if the husband has the ability to be mefer the first kind, halachas kama v'kama, he should have the ability to be mefer the second kind. The chacham would say, no, you see, for example, that when it comes to a mikveh, we see that when it comes to the halachas of tumah v'tahara, we don't say like that. Now, that is what now. So again, the Ran brings three different girsahs over here of what the Gemara is saying. His first girsah is that actually we're not even bringing a person in at all. According to the first girsah that he brings, the argument that they're making against Rabbi Eliezer is strictly from a mikveh itself. Namely, they tell him, let's consider, again, a mikveh makes somebody tahor when he toivels in it, but when a person is tahor and then dips in the mikveh, but then he touches a sheretz in the, not even touches a sheretz in the mikveh. But let's say, for example, it's true that if he touches a sheretz in the mikveh, it becomes tomei. But not only that, we're not saying that that going to the mikveh prevents him from becoming tomei in the future. Obviously not. So you see again that just because you could say, yeah, you could argue the same thing. The tumah that he already has is stronger than the tumah he doesn't have yet. Yet we don't say that. Yet we say the mikveh removes the tumah that already exists, but it doesn't prevent him from getting tomei in the future. Whether we're talking about that he becomes tomei by touching a sheretz right there in the mikveh, or whether we're talking about that he becomes tomei from a sheretz or whatever kind of source of tumah after he gets out of the mikveh. What? Yeah. So we see it doesn't prevent him from becoming tomei after he gets out of the mikveh or while he's in the mikveh if he touches a sheretz. So we don't even need. So according to that girsa, according to the first girsa of the Ran, we don't even need to. We don't even need to bring in the fact of the business about a person swallowing a ring, because from the din of toveling in a mikveh all alone, we see this point that a mikveh is matahar a person when he tovels in it, but it doesn't prevent him from becoming tahar when he's in the mikveh or in the future. So that's his first girsa. His second girsa is, like we said, his second girsa is what we said so far, which is also the girsa that we have printed in front of us in the Gemara, and a girsa that the Rosh and Tosfos discuss might be a better girsa. That we're contrasting a mikveh's ability to make somebody tahor with the person's ability to affect the ring that he swallowed, where the ring is tahor and he doesn't prevent it from becoming tamei, or where the ring is tahor and he does prevent it from becoming tamei when he goes into an oil mess, versus when the ring is tamei and he doesn't make it tahor by toveling in the mikveh. Then the Ran has a third girsa as well, which is that does the kavachomer the other way around, that starts with the person and then works back to the mikveh. Madach a person who is, so madach a person is able to prevent, who's not able to prevent the tummy ring from who's not able to make the tummy ring tahor. Again, he swallowed a tummy ring. He toils in the mikveh, and yet he doesn't make the ring tahor. Nevertheless, on the other hand, if the ring is tahor, he prevents it from becoming tameh. How much more so, we could have argued, that a mikveh which makes people tahor, how much more so it should prevent people who are tahor from ever becoming tameh. So the third girsa would be basically the second as the same as the second. It both includes the mikveh and the person, except that we're going in the opposite direction. We're starting from the person and then working back to the mikveh. In any case, the point is, according to whichever girsa we follow, the point is shmamina loy chaylin. So you see from the Chachamim's argument to Rabbi Eliezer. Now they disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, but they're trying to use an argument that they're trying to get Rabbi Eliezer to see things from their point of view. Therefore, obviously, they have to be following Rabbi Eliezer's own view of his own shitta. So given that he's saying the husband can be made for in advance. And we're discussing the question, what does he mean when the husband is made for in advance? Is the neder chal for a little bit and then disappears? Or is it never chal in the first place? Evidently, from their argument, you must say that Rabbi Eliezer says they're not chal at all. Because after all, they're comparing it to Tumah Vatara. And Tumah Vatara, we don't say the Tumah exists for a moment and then disappears afterwards. So evidently, that at least they're understanding Rabbi Eliezer to be saying that the neder is never chal in the first place. So they're telling Rabbi Eliezer, you're saying that if the husband was made for the wife's neder before she ever expressed the neder, you're saying the neder never has any time of validity, in which case then that would be similar to the case of Tumah Vatara, where also the thing never has a moment of becoming tameh in between. Yet we see that a kavah chomer like that does not work when it comes to Hilchas Tumah Vatara. So therefore, why should it work when it comes to Nedarim? An interesting side point over here is an interesting thing that Achronim discuss. When a person goes to the mikveh, what is it that makes him tahor? Is it the going into the mikveh, the dipping in the mikveh that makes him tahor? Or the Kesef Mishnah has an interesting understanding in the Rambam that actually it's not the dipping in the mikveh that makes the person tahor, it's actually the person coming out of the mikveh that makes him tahor. And then they discuss how that would fit with our Gemara over here. In particular, in our Gemara, anyway, when we're talking about the person being in the mikveh and becoming tameh, the Rosh understands that we could be talking about, let's say, imagine that while he's in the mikveh, he's touching a sheretz with one hand, and then with the other hand, he's touching a keli, which is partly in the water and partly out of the water. So it's not completely in the water, therefore it's not becoming tahor. And he's touching a sheretz, and then at the same time, he's touching this keli, and therefore he's metame the keli. Okay, actually, the Rashash asks on that. If a person is metame from a sheretz, he can't be metame a keli. He's only a rishon metoma, so he explains that we're talking about, let's say, he was touching a zav while he was in the mikveh. Whatever the case, the point is, there's an interesting point over here that maybe, in fact, the person only becomes tahor when he exits the mikveh, not when he's in the mikveh. And they discuss, in fact, Achronim discuss that how that would fit with our Gemara. One interesting thing. So there is quite a bit of interesting discussion about the ins and outs of that, of the Kesef Mishnah. The Rebbe actually brings in a letter. He says there's somebody who gathered together in a sefer that was printed before the war that asked a whole bunch of questions on the Kesef Mishnah and how can we accept it. On the other hand, there's a sicha where the Rebbe explains that the fact is the Kesef Mishnah says it. We have to respect what he says. And there's a lesson in an Avodas Hashem that the idea is it's not just the dipping in the mikveh, which represents the bittul to Hashem, which makes the person tahor. The question is, what happens when the person is coming out back into the world, whether he still has that, whether he's still in that state of tara, whether he's now able to be poil on the world and work on making it a didah b'tachtonim? That's where we see the real tara is. There's actually something very similar that Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch says in his commentary on Chumash when he discusses the deeper idea behind tevilah. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, so again, based on this argument that the Chachamim are using to Rabbi Eliezer, it sounds like they're understanding him to mean that, in fact, that the neder never is chal in the first place, and therefore they're drawing an analogy the same way as, for example, the tumah is never chal on this ring in the first place. The person, let's say, swallowed the tahor ring. We don't say it becomes tameh momentarily while it's in his stomach and then becomes Toher. We just say it remains Toher the whole time. So and yet we see that we can't use that as a basis for a Kavachomer to say by the same token that a mikveh should accomplish the same thing proactively. So why should it work by Nedarim? But that shows the fact that they're making that argument shows that they understand Rabbi Eliezer to be saying that the Nedar is never Chal. Well, the Gemara says, okay, but Ema Seifa, but look at the next part of the Braisa, and you'll see, on the contrary, the Braisa continues, Omru Loi Rabbi Eliezer, that the Chachamim made another argument against Rabbi Eliezer. They said, you're saying, Rabbi Eliezer, your premise is that it's easier to be Mevatel, something that doesn't exist. And therefore, you're saying if you can be mevatel a neder that already exists, how much more so you can be mevatel a neder that doesn't yet exist? So they argue to him, im matbilin kli tome litaher. After all, if you're toveling a keli which is tome and making it toher thereby, yatbilu kli lichshi tome litaher, would you say by a kavachomer that you can tovel a keli that proactively, that now you're toveling it in advance, so that later on when it becomes truma, then when it becomes tome, then it should become tahor? Obviously not. Obviously we don't say that. Even you, Rabbi Eliezer, don't hold of such a thing. So your kavachomer doesn't really work. So now, shma mina chaylin. Now, based on that argument that the Chachamim are saying, it sounds like they're understanding Rabbi Eliezer to be saying that the nedarim are chal. Because after all, what are they saying? It's like toveling a keli. What would we say? Hypothetically, we would say that if you tovel a keli, then it makes it that net now when it later on touches a source of tumma, hypothetically, it becomes tumme for a moment and then the tumma disappears. But obviously we don't say that. Well, that would mean, though, that they understand it to mean that Rabbi Eliezer that Rabbi Eliezer's kavachomer in the case of Nedarim would require us to say that the Nedar exists for a moment. So then in that case, that shows they do hold that way, that they understand Rabbi Eliezer to be holding that way. So which is it? From the Braisa itself, from the different arguments that the Chachamim are making against Rabbi Eliezer, you could go either way. So the Gemara answers, Amri, the Bnei HaYeshiva answered, So the Gemara says Shema Min Ochaylin. So that shows that it is Chal. So the answer is the Gemara says Amri the Bnei HaYeshiva said no. What happened over here was Rabbanon loy kaimi lahoin b'taimi de Rabbi Eliezer. What happened is when the Chachamim are discussing this with Rabbi Eliezer, they themselves did not understand. They themselves were not certain of Rabbi Eliezer's position. They knew that Rabbi Eliezer had said that the husband can be made for the nedarim in advance. They were having the exact same question that the Gemara started with over here. When we say that he's made for the neder, is it that he's made for it and it never takes effect in the first place, or is it that it takes effect and then is immediately bottled? The Chachamim, arguing against Rabbi Eliezer, themselves were uncertain what Rabbi Eliezer holds about that because he didn't specify. So therefore, they wanted to give him both arguments. So they're telling him like this: My Sviralach. They're asking him, look, how do you hold? If you hold that the neder is chal for a moment and then becomes bottle, such that, as we said, if somebody else is matpis in that neder, then they're able to do that. Well, then, to heavy kli to yovtach, then we're going to slug you up by the case of the keli, the last braisa, the last part of the braisa that we just mentioned, that you don't say that you tovel a keli and that prevents it from becoming tumah in the future, the same way you can't, even though you could argue that tumah that has not yet come to pass is weaker than tumah that already exists. Yet we say that a mikveh can remove the tumah that already exists, but it can't prevent tumah from being chal in the future. So then that would be like a keli. A keli, hypothetically, you would say becomes tomei for a moment and then tahor. Obviously, you're not saying that. So how can you say that the neder is chal for the moment and then becomes batal as the result of then how could you say that the neder is batal as a result of his afara in advance? And if you don't hold that they're chal to have a mikveh to yovtach, then we can slug you up from the earlier part of the braisa involving the mikveh, where again we don't make a kavachomer over there, whether it's a kavachomer between a mikveh and a person, or within a mikveh itself, or whatever. However, the three different gersos that we go according to. So we don't say again. Now we don't say that a mikveh prevents a person from becoming tamei when he tovels in it if there's a sheretz in there. Or we don't say that a person who swallows a ring, which is tamei, makes it become Toher when he tovels, etc. The whole argument that we made. So then we could compare it to that, where there's no Truma in the first place, or where there's no Tahara in the first place, and therefore that would be the equivalent of the Neder never being Chal. So either way, they're telling Rabbi Eliezer, no matter how you hold in this Iboya, in this question that is driving the whole sugya over here, we have a way of schlugging up your Kavachon. So we still haven't proved one way or the other what Rabbi Eliezer holds, because we can say that even the Chachamim themselves were unsure what he holds, and therefore they want to cover all their bases by bringing him various arguments. So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's try to bring another proof. The Braisa continues, Amar Lahem Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, to back up his position, he says, I'll give you a different Kavachomer. Umazroyim Tmeim, Madach, consider the case of seeds that are Tomei. And the fact is, if you take these Tomei seeds and plant them in the ground, Tahodin, they become Tahor. And the Ran says we have a pasuk that shows us that point. So then, Zruim v'omim like Kolshekin, how much more so we know that when you have seeds that are already planted, if Tumah touches them while they're growing, how much more so then they don't become Tomei. And the fact is, he says to the Chachamim, look, the fact that when you plant a seed, it becomes Tahor, fine, you have a pasuk for that. But where do we get the fact that a seed remains Tahor while it's growing, if Tumah touches it? You must get it from this kind of Kavachomer. Well, if you accept that Kavachomer when it comes to seeds, then why can't you accept it when it comes to when you use the same Kavachomer as far as Nedarim? Again, we would say the same thing. The Tumah that already exists on the seeds is able to become Tahor by planting them, and Kavachomer that the Tumah that doesn't yet exist on them, that them being planted in the ground prevents them from becoming Tomei. Well, so you see that something that exists, the Tumah that exists, is stronger than the Tumah that doesn't yet exist. And we make the Kavachomer and we say that both of them are Tahor when it's planted in the ground. So why can't we say the same thing with Nedarim? So, Shmamin Oloi Chaylin. So, doesn't that demonstrate then that Rabbi Eliezer must hold, in the case of the Nedarim, that they're not Chal at all? The same way as when you plant the seeds, but you don't say if Tumah touches them while they're planted, you don't say they become Tomei momentarily and then the Tumah disappears. And the Ran says it has to be that way, because if you were to say that the Tumah disappears, what do you mean? How would it disappear? There's nothing that happens to it to make it disappear. If it became Tomei while it was planted in the ground, it would remain Tomei. Because there's nothing that happens to it to take away the Tumah. So actually, Rabbi Akiva Eger asks on that, and he says that, one second, you could say that maybe they do become Tomei, and then right away, since they're planted in the ground, then they become Tahor right away again. How do you know Takanot? How do you know Rabbi Eliezer doesn't hold that that's the mechanism? They become Tomei for a moment, and then they become Tahor, right away without having to do anything to them. So that's Rabbi Akiva Eger asks the question. So the Or Sameach has a long discussion about it, where he says there can be a difference between whether you did something that requires machshava or not. The fact is, seeds become tahor whether you intended to plant them or not, as opposed to when it comes to toveling something, you need a certain degree of kavana when it comes to toveling, at least for certain kinds of cases of dipping in the mikveh. So in any case, the point is that if we're drawing a comparison with seeds in the ground, we're saying they never become Tomei. You can't say that they become Tomei while they're in the ground and then after a moment they become Tahor. They evidently never become Tomei in the first place. Well, by the same logic, if Rabbi Eliezer is using that to back up his opinion, then we would have to say that it would mean that the Nedarim are never Chal in the first place. So the Gemara says, so good, that proves it. Shmamin Eloi Chaylin, that shows that according to Rabbi Eliezer, he would say the Nedarim are not Chal in the first place. So applying that to the Naftamina, we said before, if the wife were to make a Neder, let's say that I will be a Nazir, and somebody else in Hebrew and says, Vani, then according to Rabbi Eliezer, the other person does not become a neder because this neder of hers had no period when it was ever valid because he had been made through it in advance and it never had a time when it would actually be effective. Okay. So the Gemara asks, V'rabbanan le'bavshi kavachomer. Now, though, are you telling me from all of this discussion, it seems to come out that the Chachamim don't douche in the Kal Vachomer? It sounds like the Chachamim are not accepting the basic concept of a Kal Vachomer between something that already exists and something that doesn't exist yet. Because all this time, in the Braises, they're arguing to him and they're saying that you see that it doesn't, that such a Kal Vachomer doesn't work by mikveh. You see that such a Kal Vachomer doesn't work by a person who tovels in a mikveh or goes into an oil amass. You see it doesn't work by toveling kalim in a mikveh. Rabbi Eliezer himself brings them back a Kal Vachomer involving seeds. So the bottom line is, it sounds like so far the Chachamim don't even accept such a Kal Vachomer. Well, the question is, how could we say that? Bahatanya, we have a braisa that shows that we're, and the Ran points out, this braisa that we're going to bring is stronger than the braisa with the seeds, because conceivably it could be that the Chachamim might hold that seeds, while they're growing, are able to become Tomei. There's Yerushalmi that says that actually not, that even the Chachamim would agree that they can't become Tomei while they're growing, for the simple reason that then you never have plants that are Tahor. Inevitably, you have vermin of various kinds, including Shemona Shirotzim, crawl around among the plants and die then, sometimes die there. If you're going to say that that they can become Tomei while they're attached to the ground, no, we can never assume that any growing plant is Tahor. We'd have to assume it's always Tomei. But nevertheless, the Gemara over here is not dealing with that. So the Ran says, conceivably, we could understand the Chachamim to be saying that, yes, they would say, as a matter of fact, seeds that are growing in the ground can conceivably become Tomei while they're attached to the ground. True, when you plant them, they become Tahor, but not necessarily does that mean that while they're growing, if they touch a source of Tumah, that they shouldn't become Tomei. Therefore, the Gemara instead is going to bring a proof from a case involving an Omer HaYivriya, where everybody agrees with the din that we're going to learn in the following braisa. So the braisa says, Yocho yimker odmas bitek shi naira. You would think that, now we know the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that a man can sell his daughter as a maidservant, and we know he can do that when she's a katana. So now you would think, says the braisa, that he could do it when she's a naira as well. And the answer is that no, amarta kal vachomer. You can show by a kal vachomer that it's not so, that he can't. Because what happens when a girl was sold as an Omer HaYivriya when she was a katana, before she developed Shtei Sairus? The din is, as soon as she develops Shtei Sairus, automatically she goes free. And we know that from a pasuk that says, V'yotza chinam ein kosef. The pasuk says she goes out for free without paying any money. And we learn that that means that there's an extra thing that allows her to go free without having to pay anything more than an evet ivri, namely if she develops shtei sairus. So when she's already sold, if she was sold a year or a few years or whatever earlier, and the 6 years aren't up yet, but she develops shtei sairus, right away then she becomes, right away she goes free. So if she hasn't been sold yet, then a Kal Vachomer will tell us how much more so that her father has no right to sell her anymore. In other words, even though we do say, as we learned in Ksubas, and as we learned sometimes several times in our Masechta, that during the time of her nairus, her father still has a certain reshus over her, but that reshus does not extend to the extent of being able to sell her as an Omer HaYivri. Well, so we see that. So we see the Chachamim do accept that kind of Kal Vachomer. So we see that there's something that was already chal versus something that's not. And we say the thing that was chal is stronger, and we can douche in a Kal Vachomer from it for something that has not yet been chal, because we're saying, in other words, that we can make a Kal Vachomer that if when she developed, that if when she's already been sold, where the selling already exists, then she's able to go free with simonim, how much more so when the sale does not yet exist, that it shouldn't be able to take effect. So we see the Chachamim accept that kind of Kal Vachomer. So why don't they use the same? Why don't they accept the same kind of Kal Vachomer when it comes to Afaras Nedarim? So the Gemara answers: Ein, as a matter of fact, yes. But Alma Darshi Kal Vachomer, as a matter of fact, yes. Generally speaking, the Chachamim will accept such a Kal Vachomer. as we have by the Naira and maybe even by the seeds as well. The shiny hocha de amakra isha hikimenu v'isha yifredenu. It's different over here because of the pasuk that they quoted in the Mishnah that says, where the pasuk says her husband can be makayim the neder, or her husband can be made for the neder, from which we learn esha balachal hokin balachal hofer, only when you have a neder that has come to the point of hakama, where you can be makayim the neder. And for that, it definitely everybody agreed that the neder has to have been expressed already for the reasons that we talked about previously. We had several different reasons that the Rishonim gave why it is so, but that's how it is. Even Rabbi Eliezer does agree you can't be makayim a neder before it was expressed, whether because we don't know that, whether because it's too weak at that point to be makayim, or because we don't know she might end up making a neder that he wants to be, that he doesn't want to be makayim, and therefore he can't be makayim in advance, or because the neder doesn't yet exist, or the Rashash even brings, there's a sifri that actually learns from the psukim that you can't, whatever the case. So the Chachamim say from the Hekish that only a neder that is able to be makuyim is able to be mufer. The eschaloi balachal hakim, but a neder that is not yet in the position of being able to do hakama because it hasn't been said yet, loy balachal hofer, then the chachamim say you can't be made for it either. So the chachamim will say, sure, Rabbi Eliezer, you have a great kavachomer going over there, but gzeres hakosov blocks it. So now the Ran asks, well, in that case then, so if the Chachamim accept the Kavachomer, basically, and they're only saying where there's a posik against it, then they don't accept it, then Taka, the Kavachomers that they brought, but when they tried to slug up Rabbi Eliezer's Kavachomer, and they said, for example, from the case of the mikveh, of the person toveling in the mikveh, or the person swallowing a ring, or the person toveling kalim in the mikveh, Taka, why don't they say, well, the Kavachomer, we do have a Kavachomer between something that doesn't exist yet and something that already exists, as we see with the Naira Mairasa. So then they should say that it does work in those cases. We should, in fact, say that the mikveh should prevent the person from becoming Tomei even if he touches a sheretz in it, or that the mikveh should be able to be Matahar, the Tomei ring, even though the person has it inside his stomach, etc. The reason is, the Ran says, in fact, we have psukim for those cases as well. We have a posuk that tells us that when a person touches a sheretz in a mikveh, he becomes tamei. We have another posuk also that teaches us that a person, that if a person has a tohor ring inside his body, it doesn't become tamei when he goes into an oil mess. So therefore, so we see, in other words, the Chachamim are telling Rabbi Eliezer, as much as you may have a kavachomer, when you have a posuk that contradicts the kavachomer, then we have to set aside the kavachomer in favor of the posuk. So in all these cases, we have a posuk. And therefore, they're telling him in this case also, given that we have a pasuk, then you should have to agree with us also that in fact it's impossible to be made for these nedarim because of those words, isha yikimenu v'isha yifirenu, which teaches us that there's a similarity between them. Or we learned yesterday actually that the Chassam Sofer learns it's not literally a hekish. The Ran says elsewhere in the Masechta that it's not a real hekish, because the fact is we know there are a number of differences between Akama and Afara. So the Chassam Sofer understands it. It's more of the Torah is telling us a prerequisite. The prerequisite for Hafara is that there has to have been possible Hakama before that. And in this case, there's not, because the Neder had never been expressed yet. Okay. Mishnah says, Afaras nedarim kol hayom. The husband or the father, or in the case of the arusa, both of them together, afaras nedarim can take place the entire day, meaning until it gets dark. Technically, you have, strictly speaking, in halacha, there's a certain moment when day ends and night begins. We have a suffix whether that time is shkia or tzeitzik achavim or sometime between them, which is why, as far as Shabbos and Yom Tov, we're machmir in both directions. We start Shabbos by shkia, or a little before shkia, because of Tosfos Shabbos, and we end it after tzeis. In theory, it would be an exact 24-hour thing from when one day ends until the next day ends. So now, when we say kol hayom, we mean until that time when the day would actually end. And the Mishnah says, Yesh b'davar l'hokol l'hachmer. There's a kula and a chumra in it, which means the Ran says, we don't mean the day she made the neder. Strictly speaking, as we said before, it's actually the day that the father or the husband fears the neder. So if she makes the neder and the husband or the father only finds about it a few days later, the clock starts ticking only when he hears about it. Anyway, when we say lahokol or lahachmer, the Ran says we don't mean literally to be makel or to be machmer. There's no real kula and chumra that we can talk about over here. We mean that sometimes the time that's available for the hafaras nedarim is longer if the neder was made right after it got dark on the previous day, and sometimes lahachmer, sometimes you have a very short window of opportunity. That's what the Mishnah means. So Kate said, what does this mean? How do you have lahokol or lahachmer? How do you sometimes have less time and sometimes more? Nadra b'leil Shabbos, suppose she made the neder on Friday night after it got dark. So then yofer b'leil Shabbos over yema Shabbos ad shetechshach. So then he's able to be mefer the entire rest of Friday night as well as the entire Shabbos day until it gets dark, until Shabbos ends. Vice versa, nodra im chashecha. On the other hand, if she makes the neder right before it becomes dark, mefer ad shalei techshach, then he can only be mefer until it gets dark. Sheim choshcha v'laheper enin yochel lahofer, because if it gets dark and he's not mefer, then he's not going to be able to be mefer anymore. Now, the Ran explains, why is the Mishnah saying specifically the case where she made the neder on Shabbos? Wouldn't the same thing apply if it was any other day of the week? So the Ran says, because the Mishnah wants to, we're going to learn the next time, Bez Hashem, we'll learn on Daf Ein Zayin, we're going to talk about that you, normally, of course, you're not allowed to do Atoras Nedarim on Shabbos, but the husband or the father is able to be Mefer Nedarim on Shabbos, as we'll talk about in the Gemara on Daf Ein Zayin. It's actually also a Mishnah at the end of the last Mishnah in the Masechta Shabbos, because there's coming a deadline, and if he's not Mefer it on Shabbos, then he's not going to be able to be made for it in the future. So therefore, our Mishnah uses as an example the case where she made the neder on Shabbos to stress that point, that therefore he's going to be able to be made for on Shabbos, even though normally we should say, well, how should he be able to be made for? It's not even a neder that is necessarily impinging on Shabbos. What if she makes a neder that I won't do a certain malacha. It's not relevant to Shabbos anyhow. Because you can't do that malacha on Shabbos anyhow. And yet we're saying that he can be made for it on Shabbos because otherwise the time will pass. So therefore, our Mishnah uses the example where she made the neder on Shabbos in order to stress that point. And the Ran says that is also why the last line of the Mishnah uses the expression, why does it say mefer ad shalei techshach? Why does it say he can be mefer until it gets dark? After all, the Mishnah is trying to show us the Chumra, so it should say Einim Mefer Ela Ad Shetechshach. It should say he can only be Mefer until it gets dark. The Ran says the point is the Mishnah wants to stress, why is it that you can be Mefer Nedarim on Shabbos because he only has Sheim Choshcha V'Leihefer and Yochel LaHofer, because if it gets dark and he's not Mefer, then he won't be able to. Therefore, the Mishnah is putting it in the positive way. He better be Mefer before it gets dark, because otherwise it's going to be too late. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hafaras Nedarim Kol Hayom, Hafaras Nedarim can be any time during the day, as we said in the Mishnah. However, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amru, Ma'asles. So there's a girsa, in fact, that Tosefta has, that the first line of this Braisa is according to Rebbe, that we say, Hafaras Nedarim Kol Hayom, would be according to Rebbe. Anyway, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amru, Ma'asles. Those two Tanoim, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, say that he has 24 hours. So they disagree with our Mishnah that he only has until it gets dark. They say you always have 24 hours. So the Gemara says, my time at the Tanakama. Why does the Tanakama say that you have only until it gets dark? The answer is because Amakra b'yoyim shamay. Because the Pasuk says, on the day that he hears. Well, after it gets dark, it's ready the next day. V'rabbanan my time. What about now these other two chachamim, the Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon? Why do they disagree? They say dichtiv mi yoim el yoim, because the pasuk says from day to day, implying that you have from one day to the next. You have from the beginning, let's say, from the beginning of one day to the beginning of the next day, or from the middle of one day to the middle of the next day. So 24 hours. In fact, it's interesting. Rashi on the Pasuk actually says says a line that even though it says mi yoim el yoim, and you would think that it means it means 24 hours. Nevertheless, in fact, it doesn't mean that. Mi yoim el yoim itself means only until the end of that day. And everybody asks on Rashi that he seems to be contradicting our Gemara over here. Yeah, because in our Gemara over here, we're saying that the fact is that the we're saying that the two No. All right, so the expression Rashi uses is, you shouldn't think that miyom el yom means less, less. Therefore, it says miyom el yom, meaning that he only has until it gets dark. So everybody asks on him. In all Gemara, it seems to be saying just the opposite. Miyom el yom would say 24 hours. Not like Rashi is saying that miyom el yom means only until the end of that day. So there's a huge number of explanations, including maybe that there's obviously one simple answer is that there's a Torah Sofer in Rashi, but there's a variety of other answers as well, one of them being that Rashi is maybe basing himself on a Yerushalmi rather than Or Gemara, and then there are different answers that reconcile Rashi with Or Gemara. Anyway, okay, so the Gemara says, well, Tanakama hoksim miyom oyom, nu, what is the Tanakama doing with the word miyom oyom? Which we said, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon make that to mean 24 hours. He said, the Gemara says, Itzir, the Tanakhama would say, you need that for a different purpose. The Ibi Yom Shamai, if we only had the word Bi Yom Shamai, have Amina, Bi Mama Ein, Belel Yaloi. You would think, now the word Yom has two meanings. A Yom can mean a 24-hour period. It can also mean day as opposed to night. So if we only had the word B'yom Shamay, you would think that you can only be made for Nedarim only by day, not by night. Maybe if she makes the Neder at night, maybe you can't be made for that night, only the next morning. Maybe the word Yom means in the limited sense, the data. Siv, M'yom O'yom, therefore the Pasuk says M'yom O'yom to clarify that whether it's daytime or night, as long as it is before it gets dark, then you can be made for. In fact, one of the interesting explanations on Rashi, to explain that Rashi on the Pasuk, is that the Gemara is saying that maybe miyom el yom would mean that you have the entire oina when the neder was made. We know when it comes to the halachas of nida, the halachas of taras and mishpacha, we have the concept of oina, either a day or a night. You have, for example, she becomes nida during the daytime, and that whole day period is considered an oina. And the same thing with the nighttime. So maybe you would say, maybe the Gemara is saying, maybe you would have understood the word biyom shamay to mean such a thing, a 12-hour period, either day or night. Therefore, the word miyom oyom clarifies that no, it does mean you have the entire day. You're not limited to only one oina, but the deadline is when it gets dark, because then already it's the next day. Okay, the Gemara says, what about according to the two Tanoim? It says, and that from that they're learning 24 hours. So what are they doing with the words? The answer is, itzrich. They say you would need to teach it something else. They would say, if it only said maybe it means, maybe you have an entire week, from a day until the same kind of day a few days later. So in other words, today is Sunday. Therefore, you have until the next day like that, meaning the next Sunday, in order to be mefer. And that's not so. Even they don't say you have a week. Therefore, according to them, that is why the pasuk says b'yom shamay, to limit him to one day. But nevertheless, they say he's limited to 24 hours, but not less than that. So the Gemara says, Amar Reb Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Reb Shimon ben Levi, ein halacha ka'osa hazum. The halacha is not like that pair of Tanoim. The halacha is like the Tanakama and like the Tana of our Mishnah that you only have until it gets dark. Now, why would he need to say that the halacha is not like them? So the Rosh explains, because after all, I mean, first of all, they're two against one. If we had in the Braisa that it's Rebbe against the two of them, maybe we would say the halacha is like the two of them against him. Besides which, they do have a very logical point. You do have the word miyom el yom, and it's a little bit of a doichik to say that that means that you have both the day and the night. Or both the night and the day, as the case may be. So therefore, you would have thought to say that the halacha is like them, and therefore Rabbi Shurban Levi has to inform us that not so. On the other hand, the Rosh brings a different girsa that somebody shown him have, that he says halacha ka'isa azug, that Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying the halacha is like that pair of Tanoim. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara brings now something as far as Atoras Nedarim. Now, according to the Ran, Levi Sovel Amebed Kahani Tanoi, Levi thought to do like these Tanoim, like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, and allow 24 hours. Omalei Rav, so Rav tells him, Hochi Omer Chavivi, you should know that my uncle, which is Rabbi Chia, said, Ein Halacha Ka'isa Azug, the Halacha is not like that pair of Chacham. So according to the Girsa we have in front of us, that's exactly what it is. Levi thought that since they seem to have a more logical argument, and because they're two against one, the halacha ought to be like them. And Rab informs him, the halacha is not like them. The halacha is like the Tanakama and like the Tana of our Mishnah, that you only have until Shtia. According to the Rosh's Girsa, that according to the Rosh's alternate Girsa, Halacha Koisa Zug, then it would be the other way around, that Levi thought that you have to follow the Tanoim, the Tana of the Mishnah, and the Tanakama of the Braisa, and Levi and Rab informs him that in fact Reb Chiya said the Halacha is not like those Chachamim, but rather like the Chachamim of the Braisa, Reb Yosef, Reb Yehuda, and Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon, that you actually have 24 hours. So now the Gemara brings in something else, which, according to the Ran, this next piece is just by the way. Having mentioned Rav's opinion about Haforas Nedorim, how long you have, so incidentally, the Gemara brings something else about how the Chachamim would be Matir Nedor when it comes to Haforas Nedorim rather than Haforim. So, and then we'll talk in a minute, the Rosh has a different explanation of what this piece is doing. So the Gemara says, Chiyah bar Rav shodi gira ubodik. Chiyah bar Rav would shoot arrows and would examine. So meaning, in other words, so the Ran explains like this. If people would come to Chiyah bar Rav to be Matir Nedir, he wouldn't necessarily give them his full attention. He might even be shooting arrows or doing some other kind of malacha while he's listening to them. The point is, in other words, that he held that you don't really need to think much into the Haforas Nedarim, into our Toras Nedarim, because we learned earlier in the Masechta there's two major ways of being matter and neder. There's Pesach and there's Charata. So Pesach, you have to consider carefully. You have to think of some consequence of the neder that the person might not have thought of and ask him, did you realize that consequence when you made the neder? On the other hand, Charata doesn't really require all of that. Charata is just you ask him, do you regret having made this neder? So now, what we're saying here, according to the Ran's understanding, is that Chiyah bar Rav would just ask the person, are you having Charata? So you don't really need to think very much into it. So therefore, Chiyah bar Rav could even be doing other kinds of things, such as archery, while he's listening to the person. And then the person is saying, yes, I'm Mescharet, and Chiyah bar Rav is Matar on that basis. He doesn't really need to give it his full attention because Charata doesn't really require much attention. The person says, I have Charata, then that's that. Rabba bar Rav Huna Yosef v'koyim, Rabba bar Rav Huna would sometimes sit or sometimes stand. In other words, he also wasn't particularly careful. He also held that you can use Charata, and therefore he didn't make a point of he dafka has to be sitting to give it his full attention, or he dafka has to be standing. It would just be however he happened to be at the moment. And then a different explanation, actually, Shita Mukubetzis brings, is he would say, fine, I'm not going to go as far as Chiyah bar Rav to say that you could be doing something else while you're being Matir Neder. Fine, you at least have to give it attention to the extent that you're not doing something else in the middle, in between, like shooting arrows. But on the other hand, you don't dafka need to be standing or sitting, as the case may be. Now, that's all according to the Ran's explanation. The Rosh brings two other possible explanations. One is that the Gemara later on Ein Zayin Omid Beis, is going to discuss the question of whether you need to be sitting or standing when the Gemara is going to be discussing later whether you can use Charata or whether you davka need a Pesach and do you have to be standing or do you have to be sitting? So now, according to that, the Rosh says this piece doesn't really belong here. It belongs a block later when we discuss that point of whether you need Pesach or Charata. Then, though, the Ran brings a very interesting idea that relates to, again, we said he brought a girsa from some Rishonim that we said the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. According to that, then, when we say that Chiyah bar Rav would shoot arrows or Rabba bar Rav Huna would be standing and sitting, according to that, rather the Rosh explains what we're saying is they were following the idea that the halacha is like those two Tanoim. Therefore, they said you have 24 hours. So Chiyah bar Rav, for example, if his wife made a neder, he wouldn't be particular, I have to be made for it right away, because he follows the opinion of these two Tanoim who say that you have full 24 hours. So therefore, he might wait and say, you know what, then I'm in no hurry to be made for the neder. Let my wife sit and stew in it for a while and think that I might end up being Makayim the neder. I have 24 hours after all. So he would shoot an arrow in order to note for himself what time it is, what the exact time was when the nether was made. So he knows now when he sees the shadow of the arrow pointing in the same direction, just under 24 hours later, then he can be matu the nether. So according to that, then, it is directly connected with what we said before. We said that Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon say you have 24 hours. And now we would have the example of Chiya bar Rab, who would actually follow that in practice and say that he has 24 hours, and therefore he'd shoot an arrow in order to note it, in order to make a mark for himself what time it is, so he knows what time, till what time he has to be matur the neder. And similarly, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, we would say, would be standing or sitting, the same thing. In other words, he would stand up to notice how long is his shadow at that point, then he would sit back down, and then he knows that 24 hours later, when his shadow is almost the same length, or is almost in the same position, then he knows that's the last moment he has to be made for the nether. There's an interesting thing, the Shalmei Nedarim, which is an Achron who wrote an important Pirush on Nedarim, printed 150 or so years ago, he has a very interesting chap on this. He says he mentioned this to a number of great Chacham of his times, and they liked this idea a lot. Rabbi Bar Rav Huna in particular, we learned earlier in the Masechta when we had a whole discussion about whether you can use Pesach or whether you can use Charata to be Matir and Neder, or whether you Davka need Pesach. We said over there that Rabbi Bar Rav Huna kind of takes a middle ground. He says you can't use only Charata, but you don't need such a strong Pesach either. So based on that, then now the Gemara is saying that he would sort of be halfway between standing and sitting. Since on the one hand, you can't use Charata exclusively, therefore he can't only be standing, he needs to pay attention to a certain Pesach. On the other hand, since you don't need a full-fledged Pesach, according to him, then therefore you don't need to be fully sitting, you can be like standing part of the time, sitting part of the time, and you can still be Matur Neder on that basis. And the Shalmei Nedarim says, he mentioned that to a number of Chachamim of his time, and they liked this idea a lot. They said it really fits with that Gemara earlier.